put any...
Tonight is October 16th. We're learning Bava Kamma, Chapter 5, Mishnah 1. And my records told me that we began this Mishnah back on June 12th.
That's correct.
But I don't know who was here and who wasn't here. I only know that I'm here because my computer says I was.
We're here.
But I don't remember that much of the Mishnah. The Mishnah. You can take this one. Okay, so it's Chapter 5. Mishnah 1 in Bava Kamma. We're going to read the Mishnah as if we never saw it before. And the Mishnah says as follows. Shur shenagach et hapara v'nimsa uvra bitzida ve'ein yadua im ad shelo nigaha yalada v'mishen nigaha yalada Mishalem Hatsi Nezik La Para Urevia Nezik Levalad. Let's translate it. So we go back to the beginning. Shor Shenagachata Para. That's a famous statement in the Mishnah. See, it means Shor Shenagachata Para. That's what it means. That's what Shvarim are always doing. They are, to use a Hebraism, they are horning the cows, right? With their horns. So it's Keren. Right, we know the law of Karen. How much does Karen pay in Reshut the Rabim? Rabim. It depends, that's the answer.
Yeah.
Depends on what?
On whether it's a goring ox.
Right, depends whether it's a tam or a muad. So if it's a muad, it pays nezek shalem, right? Mm-hmm. And if it's a tam, it pays chatsi nezek.
Right.
And Mary Beth can't find the place.
No, just don't stop. Keep going. I'm listening. I'm finding.
Okay. So, it depends if it's a tam or a muad. So we read, Shor shenagachat hapara v'nimsa uvra bitzida. And was found ubar shala, her fetus at her side. Okay, so does that refer to the para or the shore? Which fetus, which one has a fetus, a shore or a para? Obviously a para, so it means that we're talking about the animal that was hurt.
Right, the cow that was gored.
Yeah.
And that means we certainly know, without any doubt, that yesterday that para was pregnant. And now it's been gored, and we find that it's had a miscarriage. I'm implying that the baby was born dead. Right. That's the case. Vein yadua im ad shelo nigaha yalada. Im misha nigaha yalada. And it's not known if... until it didn't gore her, she gave birth, or from when it gored her, she gave birth. So let's think of the scenario. We have this shor, and we have this pregnant para, and the first gored the second, and we find that there's a miscarriage. We don't know what happened. It could be that a few hours or a few minutes or a few seconds before the goring happened, our poor para gave birth to a stillborn. Or it could be that it gave birth to a stillborn as a result of the goring. We don't know. So what's the law? Mishalem chatzi nezik la para or via nezik levalad. You have to pay, and of course who has to pay? The Baal Hashur, the owner of the ox, has to pay chatzi nezik for the para. That's like obvious. It's telling us, of course, that we're talking about a shor tam, not a shor muad, otherwise it would be nezek shalem. So we know that it's a tam. And he has to pay for the para, but he has to pay, or via nezek levalad, he has to pay, and quarter nezek for the baby. So why? Why? Hard to figure out. Why it should be quarter nezek for the baby?
Instead of what?
Instead of half nezek.
Because it's an unusual situation. It's not an expected situation.
Okay.
And
but
so,
where we ever found quarter nezek before? No place.
No place.
Well, an unborn animal is not much good anymore.
But it's worth something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's worth a quarter.
No, no. It was only have to pay a quarter of what it's worth.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's right.
A quarter of what it's worth as meat or as what?
As whatever. It doesn't matter. As a paperweight.
Something. A baby human or a baby animal, whatever, is not considered viable until it's a certain age, right? Such that it has almost... It has a lesser status, almost.
Fine.
Halachically, such that it's hard to articulate because I'm not sure. But if you have, if it were, let's say, a viable baby, 8 days old or whatever, then maybe you'd be required chatzin nezek. But since it is something, and we have to acknowledge it's something, it's not nothing, but it's not yet something in a halachic sense almost. Then you're caught in a. I'm not sure where to go. You can't say it's nothing, so you can't say that the nezek is nothing. Halachically, you can't say it's something.
But even if it was a lampshade,
yeah,
I'd have to pay chatzin nezek.
That's right.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Well, here I think it's a matter of foreseeability, not that the shur would foresee it, but the baal shur. You know, if he wasn't watching the, you know, keeping track of him, or didn't think he would gore, and that if he gored and that the cow, it killed the cow and the baby, the calf, then it's not foreseeable, but that if it hit a cow, that cow would be pregnant. I mean, it would be an unusual situation where it would then lose the calf also. So I'm wondering if it has to do with,
I don't know if you're saying that, foreseeability, because...
You know, but you still have to pay half of a half.
But cows get pregnant, I mean, they do. Carry babies, and that's not like a completely unusual situation.
It wasn't gored because it's unlikely it was gored for the sake of the baby.
Right.
And it's not even certain that it was, you know, because of the goring that the miscarriage occurred, right?
And that's actually the answer. It's because of the uncertainty.
Because of the uncertainty.
So let's actually see the Gemara.
Okay.
And the Gemara says, this is the Gemara immediately on our Mishnah. Gemara Amar Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel, everyone see the place?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Said Rav Yehuda in the name of Shmuel, Zo divrei sumchus. These are the words of sumchus. Our Mishnah is according to one of the very, very earliest hachamim whose name we know, sumchus. Goes back to the time of the Second Temple, and perhaps even to before the year zero of the Common Era. De Amar, who said, Mamon hamutal besafek cholkin, who said money that's placed in doubt, we divide. So now we understand.
You take half and divide it together.
Right. That's the answer. Aval hachamim omrim, but the hachamim say differently. They don't agree with sumchus. What did the hachamim say? Hachamim say, the second word of the second line, Ze klal gadol bedin. Here is a great principle in justice. Hamotzi mechavero alav haraya. That should ring a bell. We've talked about that a few times in the past. And it says, Hamotzi mechavero, he who comes to motzi to take from his fellow, alav, incumbent upon him, right? Alav, like aleinu, means incumbent upon us. Alav, incumbent upon him. Haraya is the proof. Right? If I say to Jeremy, that shirt that you're wearing is mine. And Jeremy says, no, it's mine. So according to sumchus, what do? I get half the shirt. According to the rabbis, what's the law? The law is it's Jeremy's shirt because it's upon him.
Yeah.
If I want to take it from him, I have to prove
that it was really yours.
Right? If you walk into class with the book, and I say, this is my book, the rabbis say, so what if you say it's your book, but it's in her hand? You have to prove that it's yours in order to take it from her. But Sumchus says, Mamon, Hamutal, Basafek, Cholkim, you divide it up. So our Mishnah is according to Sumchus, according to this Gemara. Whereas the rabbis would say, what would the rabbi say in our case? What would the law be according to the rabbis, to the Chachamim?
That the person saying that the birth was caused by the goring has to prove
that.
And if he doesn't prove it, then how much does
pays nothing? Pays nothing because
nothing for the valat.
For the valat,
right? You have to pay chatinezik
for the
para.
But nothing.
But since you can't prove, right? Okay, let's. Go to the questions on the sheet and then back to the Gemara. We'll just go over the questions in order to make sure that we understand everything. Question one, what can we say for certain about the state of the para the day before she was gored and Jan said she was pregnant? Two is the Ubar mentioned at the beginning of the Mishnah, dead or alive? It's dead.
It's dead at the time that it's mentioned, but we don't know when the death occurred.
Right, 100%. When it's mentioned, it's dead. What does it matter what the state of the para was at the exact moment when it's gored? We said it matters because you have to know if the goring ox did damage only to the para or also to the ubar. Was the goring sure a tamah muad? That we said it must be a tam, because otherwise we wouldn't be talking about chatzi nezek. What would the law be had the goring sure been otherwise than what it is in the scenario of this Mishnah? Had it been a muad, you'd have to pay, everyone knows, nezek shalem. Mm-hmm. Right. And according to Sumchus, it would have to pay for the valad, chatzi nezek, because that's half of 100%.
Okay.
Question six is hard, but it's easy. Were there witnesses to what happened?
No.
Okay, Mary Beth says there were no witnesses, and of course she's right. Except for the fact if there's no witnesses,
how do you know it was gored?
How do you know that happened at all?
How do you know that it was gored and what Shore did to
gore? Well, it says, actually, in the English translation, it says the ox gored the cow.
That's true, that's the Hebrew also.
So somehow,
somebody
that
knew
was seen.
Something
but they didn't see what happened with the baby.
Right, you have to say there were witnesses, but they were too far away to see what happened with the baby. Otherwise, it would never get to court.
Right.
Seven. Why do you think that the Mishnah says... Oh, we'll skip seven. That's not really a good question. We'll go to eight. What do you think is the logic behind the ruling Revia Nezik Levalad? So he said... It's mamon, hamutal v'safek, money that's put in doubt, cholkin. We divide. Question 9. What principle have we learned in the third chapter of the tractate that seems to be contradicted by the ruling in this Mishnah? In the third chapter, chapter 3, Mishnah 11, we learn the principle hamotzi, michaviro, alav, haraya. You comes to take from his fellow is incumbent upon him the proof. I'll remind you of the case there. It was very similar to our case. There are witnesses that my ox was chasing yours. And then we find your ox dead.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no witnesses to what happened. So, your ox is dead, so you say,
pay up.
Whereas I say, your ox stubbed its toe. It fell. It wasn't me.
With some other ox.
It was just natural causes.
Yeah.
No proof. And there the Mishnah says, Amotzi mechaviro, alav haraya.
So, who has to prove it?
If you want to take money from someone else, you have to prove that you deserve that money.
Okay.
Why? Because possession is in itself. It's a chazakah that it's yours. If you have money in your wallet, we assume it's yours.
Uh-huh.
if you have an ox, we assume it's yours. We don't give your ox to someone else unless someone else proves it, that your ox did some damages. So it turns out that the last Mishnah of chapter 3 says, Hamutzi mechavero alav araya. That Mishnah is a libet to Hachamim, is according to Hachamim, whereas our Mishnah is a libet to Sumchus, is according to Sumchus. So what you see here is something that we've seen signs of in the past. The Mishnah is not necessarily an edited law code. It's rather a collection of traditions. Here it's according to Sumchus, here it's according to the Hachamim.
Yeah.
We saw the same matter at the very beginning of the year, last year, concerning the question of Karen in Rashut HaNizak. That is to say, if my ox, my tam, goes into your yard and gores your ox. It's a machloket between Rabbi Tarfon and the Hachamim. Usually tam pays chatzi nezek, but that's only in Rashut HaRabim. What's the law in Rashut HaNizak, in the yard of the guy got hurt? Well, one opinion says nezek shalem, one opinion says chatzi nezek, and we have different mishnayot saying different things.
Well, it would seem to me that almost every one of these could have that.
Almost every one of these?
Every one of these missions. I mean, there could be arguments made on either side.
No, of course, but I'm saying when the Mishnah was edited, mm-hmm. it wasn't edited according just to one particular approach. There are Mishnah that contradict each other.
Right.
Because there are different traditions brought together. So it's not necessarily psak halacha, not necessarily the way Rabbi Yehuda Nasi edited the Mishnah. Okay, so let's see, where are we now? Let's go back to the Gemara. So we're in the third line of the Gemara. Okay? Lameli lameimar zeklal gadol bedin. Why to me to say this is a great principle of justice? In other words, in the previous line, when the Gemara introduced the opinion of the rabbis, the sages, that you have to bring a proof to take money from someone else, they introduced it with the words, this is a great principle. Why do they say great principle? Just say the principle. Why call it a great principle? As if to say there's something special about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're adding significance to the difference here, because this is violating a well-established, broad-based, they're saying the Sulkus is going against this very authoritative, broad-based principle here of justice, of law, and this is really important that we have this machloket here.
Okay, but the Gemara doesn't go for really important. It wants to know exactly in what is its importance.
Mm-hmm.
So the Gemara is going to tell you that it's true that a motzimi chavero alav araya, even in a certain case. That's why it said klal gadol. Even in the case you might not have thought that it applies, it still applies. And it says itzterik, which means necessary. That we had to say the words klal gadol. They came to ask, add something. Defilu nizak omer bari, the mazik omer shema. That even if the person who got hurt says, bari, certainly, I know that you did it. The mazik, whereas the person accused of doing it, says shema. He doesn't say I didn't do it, he says perhaps I did it, perhaps I didn't. Even then, amotzimi chavero alav araya. In other words, let's just give it a concrete case.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I have my ox, and it gored your para, and again, witnesses were not sure exactly that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, perhaps my ox did it, perhaps it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't deny it. It could be. You say, certainly was your ox. I'm certain. What's the law? Even then, even though it's certain against maybe, still maybe wins. What does maybe win? Because the ox is in the possession of maybe. And you don't have to give up and pay unless there's a proof.
And the proof would be two witnesses?
Yep.
But if it changed from, well, I just know it, to I saw it.
Same thing.
Same thing.
It's not two witnesses.
Not two, well, but it's two witnesses only for certain things, right?
In monetary matters, it's certainly
no,
two witnesses.
Okay.
And to apply that to the case of Jeremy's shirt that I really like, right? The shirt's on Jeremy, and I say it's certainly mine. Jeremy says, I'm not sure. Perhaps it is, perhaps it isn't. He still doesn't have to give it up. Unless I can prove.
Ownership is 9/10 of the law.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Possession.
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 Excuse me, that's what I meant. It's possession. Yeah, just go prove that this is really yours.
So now the Gemara says, Inami lechi ha de itmar. Inami literally means if also, but what it means all the time in the Gemara as a technical phrase is alternatively. In other words, another reason why the Hachamim introduced their words with klal gadol, a big principle. Third word, lechi. Lechi means le means for or to. Ki means kamo, like. For like this that was said. That's alternatively, it's like for this that was said. A case we're about to bring. Hamocher shor lechaviro v'nimsa naghan. He who sells a shor to his fellow, and it turns out to be a naghan. Can you figure out what that means? It's Nagchan.
A killer
ox. Yeah.
Yeah.
A killer ox.
Yeah.
It just gores all the time. And therefore the person who bought it says, give him my money back. I didn't want a killing ox,
yeah.
What am I going to do with it?
So, if he has two witnesses that it's a killing ox?
What if he doesn't have two witnesses that it was a killing ox before it was sold?
What if he does, though?
Oh, that's easy.
That's easy.
Well, no, I'm sorry, that's not easy. Even that's not easy, as we're about to see.
Because he bought it.
Right, because he bought it.
Why would he have bought something that was already
proven?
He knew
so much about it.
That was proven to be a killing ox. So now the question that one can ask is, wait a minute. You could say, wait a minute, it wasn't a killer when I bought it. It became a killer after you.
But even if it was
a killer
when the guy bought it, but you bought it.
You bought it. You paid for it. You know, buyer beware.
So look at the machloket between Rav and Shmuel. Rav amar hare ze mekach ta'ut. Behold, this is a mekach, a sale, ta'ut, mistaken sale. In other words, the buyer got something other than what he thought he was buying, and therefore the sale is
invalid.
Because the assumption is that anyone who buys an ox expects it to be an ox you can use in your field for plowing. If it was a killer ox, then it's not what he expected, that's not what he paid for, that's not what he wanted. And the seller sold him something other than what he was supposed to be selling. So it's a mekach ta'ut, and mekach ta'ut means that it goes back. What word did you just use? It's invalid, right? Invalid. The Shmuel Amar, but Shmuel says something else. Shmuel says on the last word now of the line, Yechol Shiomar lo l'shchita machartiv lachach. It's possible that he will say to him, for shchita I sold it to you. But the seller will say, so what if it's a killer ox? I sold it to you for slaughtering. And killer oxes are fine for meat, just as any other type of ox. What type of mekach ta'ut is this? You got exactly what you wanted, as far as I understood it. So Shmuel says that the buyer can't get his money back, even though it turns out to be a killer ox. Amai? Why? So the Gemara says, why this machlokit? It doesn't make any sense to me. The nechzi, the word nechzi, is from the root chet zayin yud chet zayin he, which appears in Hebrew in the Tanakh. Chaza. Think of the word chazon.
Oh,
there's a Shabbat of the year called Shabbat Chazon. We read the
vision.
Vision. Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amoz. Shabbat Chazon. Right. So anyway, it means Nechzi means let's see. Nechzi, let's see. E gavra dezavin leradya. E gavra dezavin lenechzata. Translation, let's see if it's a gavra, if it's a man, dizavin, that buys. The word zavin everyone knows from Passover. Chad gadya, chad gadya, da zavin abba bitre zuze, right, that father bought for two zuz. Zavin is Aramaic for bought. So let's see if it's a gavra that buys for plowing, laradya, for plowing. E gavra, if it's a man, the zavin that buys, le nechsata, who buys for slaughtering. In other words, you can know from a person's livelihood, from the way he lives his life, but what reason he buys ox. You don't have to trust what he says. Look at the circumstances. What he did yesterday, what is his business? Does he have fields? Does he have a slaughtering house? And you can know what he bought it for, and then you can know if it was a mekatot or not. So why are Rav and Shmuel arguing? You don't need to argue, it's clear. Just if it's a person who usually buys for slaughtering, then it's not a mekatot. Person who usually buys for plowing, then there is a mekatot. It depends on the circumstances. The Gemara says, La, Sricha, no. Sricha, it's required. Their argument is required. It's not. It's necessary. It makes sense, the argument. Go on to the next line. Degavre dezabin laha velaha. That it's a man that buys for this and for this. You can't figure out from the circumstances. So we're back to square one. We have the argument. But the Gemara is not satisfied with that. It still says, I don't understand the argument. The nechzei e dame radya le radya e dame nechzata le nechzata. Translation: what does the word dame mean? Damim. No one knows.
The appearance.
It could be, but it's not here.
Oh, okay.
It means money.
Money.
Damim yikarim. Mm-hmm. Means lots of money. So let's see if it's money for plowing, for plowing. If it's money for slaughtering, for slaughtering. Let's see how much money the guy paid. Then we'll know what the intention was. Because oxes for slaughter cost a lot less than oxen for plowing. Because it's always the older problematic oxen, so they cost less money, whereas a plowing ox costs more. So let's just see how much he paid, then we'll know. And you don't have to have the machlokit. Good evening.
Spare copies?
They're all yours. We just found them here. Wait, you want to join us?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, I'm Ben.
Ben.
I'm here for a school project slash family history looking into thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can certainly join us, but we're not learning from...
We're learning
in Hebrew, though. The text is all Hebrew.
Here,
I have another copy. I just give you this and go on. Awesome.
Load them. That's the main text. The rest of the stuff is in Hebrew. In Aramaic.
In any case, so says the Gemara, right after the exclamation point, La Sricha. No, it's necessary. Deokir Bisra Vakai Bidame Radya. Translation: No, it's necessary. The argument is necessary. De okir bisra. Okir means, from the language of yakar, it got expensive. The di before the word, of course, is that. That became expensive bisra. Bisra is basar, meat. Mm-hmm. That it became expensive meat. Vekai bedemeid radya. And it's standing on the money of plowing. In other words, meat is very expensive these days. So that an ox for meat is just as expensive as an ox for a plow. And you can't tell what he bought the ox for from the amount of money he paid.
Why can't you tell?
Because these days, when it happened, meat was very expensive.
Okay.
So it just means we're back to square one, but you still can't figure out from the circumstances, from the context, why the guy bought the ox. And therefore we understand why there's a machloket between Rav and Shmuel. If it's a mekatut or not.
Mm-hmm.
And now we get to the point, finally. In the three dots, I left out only about a line and a half of Gemara. Rav Amar, Hareze mekatut, we're repeating Rav's opinion in order to explain it. Mm-hmm. Rav said, behold, this is an invalid sale, zeal batar ruba. Famous statement. Zeal, from the language of azil, meaning go. Batar means after, like you've heard of the masechet, Baba Batra, means the last masechet, last the after masechet. Zeal, bataruba, go after the majority. In other words, majority rules. The ruba, say it again.
What's the majority?
Read on. The ruba de'inchi l'rat Yehud de'zavne, and most of the people, for plowing, they buy.
For plowing,
they buy. In other words, 90% of the oxen sold in the world are for plowing and not for...
Because most people are going to be using it for agriculture rather than having slaughterhouses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So therefore, let's go and summarize the case. I bought an ox, and it turns out to be a goring ox, and I can't use it for plowing. Mm-hmm. I go to the person who sold it to me, and I say, give my money back. It's a mekatut. This is fair. The law, according to Rav, is I can get my money back. Because most oxen are sold for plowing, so therefore we should expect to be sold for plowing, and for plowing you don't sell someone a goring ox. So it was a mekaktut, and I get my money back. Why do I get my money back? Why is it a mekaktut? Because of the rule of zeal batar ruba. Mm-hmm. Follow the majority. Mm-hmm. But then what does Shmuel say? What does Shmuel say? It's not a mekaktut. So we're reading on in the Gemara, and it says, v'Shmuel amar, Yechol shiomar lo l'shchita mechartiv lecha. Yechol, right? It could be that he will say to him, l'shchita mechartiv lecha. For shchita, I sold it to you. V'lo zlinan bataruba. And we don't go after the majority. We don't follow the majority. Mm-hmm. Right? The seller can say, I don't care about the majority. My intention was to sell it for slaughter. I assume that's why you bought it, and I'm not giving you money back. Mm-hmm. Last four words of the line, ki azlinan bataruba, when do we go after rov? Beisura. In as isura. Isura means cases of isur and heter, of forbidden and permitted. In other words, the famous example is I have here three pieces of meat on the table. One of them I know is not kosher. Two are. But they got mixed up. Mm-hmm. The law is you can eat them. You can eat them. Why?
Because
zeal bataruba. The majority is kosher.
The majority
is kosher.
Three. One. One of them is not kosher, you said?
One of them is certainly not kosher.
But they're mixed up.
They're all mixed up.
You don't have to throw them all out.
That's a machloket among the Rishonim. You can eat all three or only two of the three. But at least you're allowed to eat two of the three. Even though you don't know, you might be eating a non-kosher meat. Why? Because each time I pick it up, there's a majority chance that it's kosher. This one, what's its law? Kosher. Because two out of three chances it's kosher. This one, two out of three chances it's kosher. This one, two out of three chances it's kosher.
Okay.
Well, wait, if you eat the first one, then it's one out of two.
No, it's still one out of two. You might have eaten.
Oh, that's right.
It's still two out of three.
Okay.
So as long as I don't eat them all three at once, but I eat each one separately.
Well, because you know that at least one of them is not kosher, so you know you're eating at least one of them.
It's like
not
exhibiting it.
So I can't
That's
eat all three at once.
But
if I'm going to eat all three of them separately, mm-hmm. some authorities say I can eat all three, some say only two of the three. But anyway,
you don't know which two.
That's an example of zeal bataruba bi'isura. And that's a hard and fast rule. Mm-hmm. But the question is that rove certainly applies to isura, but does it apply to mamon, to money? Mm-hmm. Shmuel says no. Rav says it applies even to money. Right? Because Rav says it's a mekatut because most oxen are sold for plowing. So Rav says we follow rov even in mamon. We follow majority even in money matters. Whereas Shmuel says in money matters we don't follow rov. Now let's continue reading. I'm on the second word of the line. And remember, this is Shmuel. Aval b'mamona lo azlinan bataruba. But in monetary matters, we don't follow after the rove. Ella hamotzi michavero alav haraya.
Prove it.
Mm-hmm. So even if I have, how could I prove this? Yeah, so let's say that we walk into Jeremy's house and we find that he has one red shirt in the whole house. And we walk into my house and we see that I have 90% red shirts and 10% white shirts. And tomorrow, Jeremy is walking down the street with a red shirt. I say, Jeremy, that's my shirt. And I have rove to prove it.
Because you have the majority.
Right? Because I have, in my wardrobe, a majority of red shirts. Wait a second. What's the law according to Shmuel?
Uh-uh.
Rove doesn't matter. Jeremy can say to me, what are you going to say to me in Hebrew?
This is mine.
Say to me in Hebrew?
Prove it.
Oh, okay.
Right? Jeremy will say to me, Amutsi mechaviro lavaraya, and that's the deen, that's the law. The halakha is like Shmuel. Amutsi mechaviro lavaraya, and we say that even against rove. Now, it doesn't matter if all the chances are that it's my shirt. It doesn't matter. I have to prove that it's my shirt or to take it from Jeremy. Yeah. So that's
what
important.
It's like, well, I know the ox did it. There are a lot of things that we just know that are wrong.
Well, before we take money from somebody, or invalidate a sale, which is in essence taking money, is, it's not quite the same thing as somebody saying, oh, I don't know which piece here I shouldn't be eating. And most of it really is okay. I mean, here you're talking about people's livelihood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the story. Okay, we're going to go on to the next paragraph of the Gemara. And it says, Tanya Nami Hachi, which is a standard Talmudic phrase. Mm-hmm. We say, Nami means also, Hachi means thus. Tanya Nami Hachi, we learned in a Braita also thus. In other words, something of what we've been saying is proven in a Braita. And this relates back to the beginning of the Gemara, not to where we just were, but to the beginning. And that's when the Gemara, relating to our Mishnah, said that our Mishnah is only the opinion of
Sumchus.
Whereas the Achamim would say that you don't have to pay anything for the aborted fetus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So a Braita says it explicitly. Shur shana gachet para. Venimsa ubara bitsida. the ox that gored the cow and was found its aborted fetus at its side. That's our Mishnah word for word. Veino yodea imad shelo nagaha yelada. And it's not known if before it gored, it gave birth. Im mishal nagaha yelada. If after it was gored, it gave birth. Mishalem chatzi nezek lepara uravia nezek levalad. Has to pay half for the para and a quarter for the valad. Divrei sumchus. The brightness is in black and white. V'chamim omrim, the bright that continues and says, but hachamim say, hamotzi mihavero alav hara'aya. And indeed, that's the halakha, not like our Mishnah, but the halakha is in mamon, we always say, hamotzi mihavero alav hara'aya, even against rove, even against bari, even with someone who says certainly, against all type of claims, we say amutzi mihavero alav araya. The only thing that works is a valid halachic proof.
So the owner of the goring ox would say to the man who has the ox and the embryo, or the cow and the embryo, he would say, I didn't do this. And
even if he says, perhaps I did it, he still doesn't have to pay.
But Rabbi, something else I wanted to point out, you said in terms of Bari, it was not a valid halachic proof, but Modeh B'Mikzat is, right? And so that Modeh B'Mikzat is a valid proof for the Bari, and that's why the Gemara says that they have to say Zeklal Gadol, because it says even in Modeh B'Mikzat, where otherwise it would be valid halachic proof, we even say Klal Gadol here that it overrules.
Jeremy is saying something very important. Can you explain what Modeh B'Mikzat is and how it applies here?
In some cases, I can't remember exactly. I just remember it in Baba Metzia. There are cases in which, if a person says something definite, like I know such and such, making a charge against somebody else, and that person doesn't flat out deny it, says maybe that's true, maybe that's not.
Well, what is that? No, be exact. Be exact.
Not maybe yes, maybe no. They say somebody saying you owe me such and such amount of
money. You owe me $100,
and somebody else says I don't know, I owe you $50. Mm-hmm. Then. They're admitting part of it is as though they admit all of it, and so if they admit that they owe 50, they really owe the 100 that they're charged, right? That's a valid halachic proof. If you admit a little bit of it, it's as though you admitted all of it.
But you admitted that the loan took place.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Now I remember the case. Yes. Yeah,
let him finish, somebody owes you money, right?
Mm-hmm. And then you don't pay it back. Mm-hmm. Then somebody, and that person comes to you in court and says, you owe me 100 zuzim or whatever, right? Dinarim, whatever the currency is. And you say, you loaned me money, but I owe you 50.
Right.
Well, then you're acknowledging that, yes, I borrowed the money, mm-hmm. but you're, in admitting that you owe money, you're admitting that you owe all of it.
Huh.
So you have to, if you only owe 50, you deny that you owe 100.
If you don't, but you still owe the 100.
What?
No,
if you don't out and out,
I don't owe you anything.
Right, that's, if you don't
even
out
if I'm
and out
thinking,
say,
I think it was 50.
Right, but if you don't out and out say, I owe you nothing, there was no loan, then you owe the whole thing. You owe the whole loan that's charged against you. And that's valid halachically. And so that's why the Gemara says it's important here to say Zeklal Gadol. Because it's, even in the case of Modeh B'Mikzat, which would be valid elsewhere in other cases, even if somebody said to you, definitely, I know this, definitely, you owe me, chatzinezek for, or whatever, I guess it's a ravinezek and nezek in this case,
right,
whatever.
Right,
somebody
right.
says you owe me money,
uh-huh.
in this case.
Mm-hmm.
definitely, and you say, I don't know, maybe it was my ox that did it, you're modi b'miktzat, and so you would have a hava amina, you'd think in this case, since you're modi b'miktzat, you owe the money.
Right.
Right? But the chachamim say, no, that in this case, the even modi b'miktzat, which elsewhere would have worked, does not apply. Right, and that's the meaning why that's what the Gemara is explaining when the Gemara says this is why they said zeklal gadol to suggest that there are exceptions, that this is an exception to modi.
So Jeremy is very correct in bringing that in. Actually, some commentators on the Mishnah they actually bring up what Jeremy said in the following form: the guy who owns the ox, what if he admits that he gored, but he said it was after the pregnancy took place? The law is, according to Hachamim, he doesn't have to pay for the ubar. Why not? Isn't it modeh b'miktzat? And it's more of a question of why is it not modeh b'miktzat, then modeh b'miktzat doesn't apply here. Because, well, the truth is, I don't know the answer. Why is
it not? Well, the Gemara is saying that in this case he's modi b'miktzat, because he's saying
bari v'shema is not the same thing as modi b'miktzat.
Oh, really?
No, it's not. Right, I can say that shirt is mine, and you say perhaps it is, perhaps it isn't. That's not the same thing as modi b'miktzat. Modi b'miktzat is a case in which you're 100% acknowledging part of my claim. You're not saying maybe yes, maybe no. It's different.
But it's acknowledging the possibility that...
Acknowledging the possibility is not the same thing.
How would he answer it then in the case of the shirt? You say, that's my shirt.
If I say that's my shirt, and Jeremy says, I'm not sure. Yeah. Perhaps it is, perhaps it isn't. Then that's not modeh b'miktzat. That's bari and shema.
So what would be
bari and shema?
Modeh b'miktzat
is in monetary
it's
value.
It's not... It doesn't apply in all cases. Modeh b'miktzat, the classic one, is what Jeremy said.
Okay.
I say, Jeremy, I lent you $100. You didn't pay it back. And Jeremy says, I paid you back 50. I didn't pay the other.
Or you only lent me 50.
If he's already paid 50 of it, you can go back and say, no, there was 100. No.
I didn't understand.
Okay.
Well, you said if he admits to still owing you 50.
Yeah, he admits to still owing me 50.
So does he have to pay 100?
Admit to that? No. You go.
I say he didn't pay anything back.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I thought you said that you went to Jeremy and said, you owe me $100. And Jeremy said, I paid you 50. That's all I owed.
Yeah.
Right, you're suggesting
the fact that you came and said he owed, and he said I paid you, acknowledging that he did owe you something. Then he has to pay the other 50.
I admit, I do not know at all the laws of modeh b'miktzat. Had Jeremy not mentioned it, I wouldn't have brought it in. He just reminded me that it's discussed in the commentators in this Mishnah. I admit, I do not know the application of modeh b'miktzat.
Because if you have a disease,
but let's not discuss what we don't know.
Yeah, that's right. We won't discuss what we don't know. Okay.
Yeah. But next time, when we finish,
Jeremy can go back to his notes on Baba Metzia and tell us next week the laws of modeh b'miktzat, or anyone can look it up. You know, these days you can look on Wikipedia, I'm sure. Look up modeh b'miktzat.
Yeah.
You've got all of this stuff on there. How did you do that?
I got Rav Shatzmer's email and downloaded it.
Okay.
Remember, you guys weren't here.
You weren't here.
We made up in last semester that I'm going to email the sources to everyone like an hour before class, so that if you can print them, then you'll send me an email saying I printed it, then I won't have to print it on my home computer.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's for the future. So anyway, back to... Thank you, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Back to the Gemara. We were there. The rest of the Gemara we don't have to do, right? Just one thing I want to do. So let's go on. The last paragraph of Gemara. Amar of Shmuel Bar Nachmani. Said Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Minayin lamotzimi chavero alava raya. Minayin means from where. What's the source of this principle of hamotzimi chavero alav araya? Shenemar, as it says, and he brings a proof from a verse. I don't want to look at the verse because it's really not a good proof. But I want to go now to the middle of the next line, where it says, Matkif la Rav Ashi. Which means, attacked it Rav Ashi. And what did Rav Ashi say? He said, Ha lamalikra sparahu. Translation, behold, why do I need a verse? Sparahu. It's axiomatic. That's a famous Talmudic line, that if something is self-evident, it doesn't require a verse. Now, of course, we can debate what does self-evident mean. But at least Rav Ashi says the principle of Hamotzi Mechaveiro Alav Araya is so self-evidently true that it's ridiculous to look for a verse. And then he explains the Di Ka'iv Le Ke'eva Azel Levei Asya. That hurts him a hurt goes to the house of the doctor.
What?
In other words, if you have a medical issue, go to the doctor. The doctor's not going to come to you. You go to him. So if I say it's my shirt, I have to go to the doctor, which means go to the court and prove it.
Okay.
It's self-evident that I can't get Jeremy's shirt without proving it's mine. Otherwise, the world would completely fall apart. All of society is based on the principle, as Jan said earlier, that ownership is 9/10 of... what did you call it?
No, possession.
Possession is 9/10 of ownership. So it's a svara. It stands on its own merit. Of course, one of the akronim, one of the later commentators, asked the obvious question. If it's svara, how could Sumchus disagree? And the more you think of it, what Sumchus says is not logical. How could you say that money that is in doubt, divide it up?
It doesn't make sense.
Well, but how do you put it in doubt? In other words, is your word, that dollar bill is mine, is that enough to make it in doubt, or do I have to have some limited proof?
Absolutely.
And then we're just
that's
talking about level of proof.
Right, Jeremy's got it. That's the question. But we applied it here. We applied Sumchus. Look at our Mishnah. There's no proof at all of what happened when, with the goring of the pregnant animal. Was it pregnant when my ox gored it? Did it give birth already when my ox?
Well,
there's no proof in either direction.
Circumstantial.
Well, but no, maybe, you know, maybe the para had just, you know, given birth to a stillborn and was lying there suffering when the ox came along and gored it.
But it is,
because it couldn't run away.
We didn't debate this. This is important. Give it me.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to say welcome back.
Thank
actually
you.
Leaving with the crack of dawn tomorrow. So
thank you, because he was saying that no one in Dallas cares about him or wants him back.
Yeah, right.
Sure. we'll catch up.
Jen and Tom, that was right before you walked in. We were saying Vivian's not coming tonight. Amiram's not coming.
It was so sad.
Ilana emailed you not coming. So I said, no one wants me, and then you walked in.
Oh, okay.
So debate what you were debating. Continue that debate.
What was it?
You were trying to prove something about the probability of what happened
in our case of the
Mishnah.
Okay, so is more than 50% likely that if an ox gores a cow enough to kill her, that if she's pregnant, she's going to miscarry.
No, of course, no, but,
of course,
but that's not the question.
But the issue is, how do you know that she didn't miscarry and she was just lying there trying to recover for this when the ox came along and gored her?
No, answer her. There's a good answer.
I mean, how do you know? Yes, if the goring happens first, chances are that the fetus is going to miscarry, is going to be killed. One way or another, the fetus is going to be killed. And the goring itself could induce a miscarriage.
So she's.
But how do you know that the miscarriage didn't happen first?
You don't know it, but you do know that goring is going to cause a miscarriage.
No, but you're conceding too much. There's a way for you to answer Jan's question.
With no doubt.
With Rove.
I am a person who is like, you know, if there's money, divide it. I don't like this contention.
You know, compromise and have a win-win that's really a lose-lose.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
if everybody's unhappy, then it's okay.
I want to put these two things together, what you guys are arguing over and what Jeremy just brought up. So, what Sumchu says, that we divide up money that's in doubt, it really seems ridiculous if all that creates the doubt is someone's claim. Mm-hmm. Like the minute I claim that shirt is mine, that creates a doubt. He has to give me half the shirt. That doesn't make any sense. Mm-mm. Rather, what? Perhaps Sumchu said what he said only when there's rove for the claim.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In other words, right. I have 9/10 of my shirts are red, and Jeremy only has 1/10 of his shirts are red. So no, then there's rove for my claim. Then I can understand, okay, Sumchu has a leg to stand on, but still the Hakamim say never, we don't rely on rove. It's a motzimi chaviro ala varaya. So now go back to our Mishnah, mm-hmm. which we said is according to Sumchu, that we divide up the half nezik for the fetus, and it's 25% has to be paid. Mm-hmm. And I just said, why? What basis is that? But there is a basis for what Sumchu says, and that we'll see in the Yerushalmi.
Okay.
The Talmud Yerushalmi.
Okay.
At the bottom of the page. And I thought Mary Beth was going to say this.
I'm sorry.
Okay, you disappointed me. So the Talmud Yerushalmi says, Gemara, this is on our Mishnah. V'chi kol ha'parot mapilot? And is it that all of the cows have miscarriages?
No, miscarriage is pretty rare.
Miscarriages are rare. Of course they're rare.
So therefore, is a miscarriage, we assume that the majority, because the majority of the cases are, it was the result of an accident, which
right.
in this case was the goring.
Right.
Therefore, the miscarriage was caused by the goring.
Right, of course. All right, that's what I thought Mary Beth was trying to say.
Yeah, I did
of
too.
Course, Sumchus doesn't say just because it could be that the goring caused the miscarriage, therefore you have to pay half of the damage, half of half, which is 25%. No, it's because it's 95% certain that if there's a miscarriage, and if there was a goring, it must be the goring caused it, because otherwise, why would the cow miscarry? Cows don't usually miscarry.
Right.
That's what the Yerushalmi says. V'chi kol ha'parot mapilot? No. Nahalech behen achar harov. We will go in them after the rove. V'amor, and say, makmat nigichai pila. And say, because of the nigicha, it miscarried. Because of the goring, it miscarried.
Right.
I don't.
That's where I thought
you
were going.
Yeah. You know, when, of course, in the climate like we have here, which is different from the climate in Israel, or some of the place, but that, you know, that we have calving in the spring. But a lot of times, the cows have trouble and they have to pull the calves. So it's not like, I mean, I don't know how often they have to do that. Mm-hmm. They have to do it sometimes.
Yeah, but I don't know how much that's a result of a
modern breeding
and animal husbandry versus what would have been if these were just, you know, go back a while in terms
cows
of
cows on the street.
Yeah, this was just. I mean, if these cows weren't so inbred.
Yeah,
which is a big problem now. Mm-hmm. And even at that, you might, I'm not sure that you would, I think you would still find the situation that said that chances are this miscarriage was caused by some form of injury to the cow rather than happen to themselves. Because either that or people knew how to help birth cows.
Yeah.
And when that cow was about ready to be birthed, they...
That's right.
They were out there wandering around. Yeah. They were out there helping with it. So.
Yeah. Okay, let's read one more line of Yerushalmi. Zotomeret... The last four words of the line. Zot omeret shelo hilchu b'midat hadin b'mamon achar harov ela b'miyut. That means, zot omeret, shelo hilchu, that they didn't go, b'midat hadin, in matters of justice, b'mamon, concerning money, achar harov, after the majority, ela b'miyut. We follow the miyut. Now what is it? Let's just think what that means. So what it means is that we've learned that there actually are three different ways to have theoretically decided the case in our Mishnah. Again, the case in our Mishnah, we remember the pregnant victim and miscarriage was took place. We don't know if it was because of the Negiha or not because of it. So the first way you could have looked at it, say, look, 95% chance the miscarriage was caused by the Nikiha, and therefore the law would be that the owner of the shore has to pay half for the cow and half for the fetus.
Right.
That's one possibility. No one holds like this.
Right.
Now, that would be if we would...
And why do you think no one speaks for that possibility?
I'm not sure, but we don't go. We don't go in Mamon, Acharo. What can I say? The other possibility is Sumchus, Holkim. If there's a doubt in which the rove says you have to pay, so that's when we pay half, Holkim. That's what Sumchus says. Whereas the Hachamim say, even though there's rove, not only don't we pay full, we don't even pay half, we pay nothing until you can prove it. So there are three different possibilities. The Yerushalmi is pointing out, we don't go with the first one, that you have to pay everything because of rove. We go according to Sumchus, according to the second one, half, whereas Hachamim hold, you don't even pay anything. So there's really those three possibilities. And the Halakha is, you pay nothing. You pay nothing. Okay, this is a pretty. This is pretty important. This is pretty interesting, and we still have a little bit of time left to finish the Mishnah. We only got to the first half of the Mishnah. This is the second half of the Mishnah.
Yes.
So the second half of the Mishnah is the opposite case. You ready?
Okay.
V'chein para shenagcha et ashor v'nimsa v'lada b'tzida. And so a pregnant cow gored an ox, and we found a living baby at the side of the para.
Wow, this is so nice.
And we don't know, concerning this mean goring cow, if it gored when it was pregnant or gored after it gave birth.
Is this going to...
So whether we're going to blame the baby.
Right, very good. We don't know if we should blame the baby or not. Is the baby an accomplice to murder or not?
Does the baby also, for the sake of the baby, does he also have to pay? So he's got to pay because of the cow did it and because the baby did it.
Okay, that's about it. We have to be more exact. Let's read on. Yeah. Let's read on.
The reality was that this cow that was about to give birth was so mad and so mean upset over this that she struck out and gored this cow.
Okay, wait a second. Let's read on. We only have 5 minutes.
Yep.
Or defending the cow.
And then it states the doubt. Vim yadua ve'en yadua, and it's not known. Im ad shelo nagacha yilada, if before it gored it gave birth. If once it gored, it gave birth.
Right.
So what now? We have to now be serious for a minute and think really, what's the issue? Well, I'll remember the issue is that a goring ox that's a tam pays nezek shel chatzi nezek, but only pays migufo. Remember, it pays from its body. The owner doesn't have to shell out additional money. Let me remind you. So we have this.
Right, we have this ox, which this goring ox, which is, in this case is a goring calf, which is worth 50 zoos, and it gores an ox that's worth 200. Right, so chatzi nezek is 100, but the ox that gored the calf is only worth 50, so you only have to pay 50, because you don't have to pay, in the case of a tam, more than what you're worth. So now the question is,
what is that newly birthed cow worth?
What is the worth of the cow that gored? Because the cow that gored was pregnant.
Uh-huh.
Now, if it was pregnant, it was worth 100, let's say. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't pregnant, if it already had given birth, it was only worth 50. So,
yeah. How does the value of that?
So, if the birth took place before the goring, only has to pay 50. If the birth took place.
Before the goring,
only has to pay 50. If it took place after, that means that the goring cow was worth a lot because it had a baby inside of it.
Right.
It was worth 100, and therefore it has to pay the full half damage.
Yeah. So what's it mean?
So that would be, were we to know what happened, were we to know two witnesses, so we'd know. If again it gored while it was pregnant, has to pay 100.
So,
if it gored when it wasn't pregnant anymore, have to pay 50. We don't know.
So since we have an uncertainty in following the first half of this, we would pay 75.
Pay 75 according to Sumchus.
Right.
That's what it says. Last nine or eight words of the Mishnah. Mishalem chatzi nezek min hapara, ruviya nezek min havalad. Pay half from the para.
Right. The para. Well,
the para would pay 50, and you'd pay. And if it was 50 for the para and 50 for the unborn one yet, then you're going to pay 50 for the para because you're capped at 50 because that's its worth, and you're going to pay half the 50, which is 25.
But that's true in this particular case, but I just want to explain how it's in the words of the Mishnah, right? So the Mishnah says you pay half nezek from the para.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say how much the para is worth.
Right.
In other words, whatever the para is worth.
Right. Why don't we make the para worth the same thing as the?
Wait a second. If we do what Jan said, so if the para is worth 200, the shor is worth 200. You pay half from the para, and then you don't pay anything from the valad. So there's nothing left to pay. You paid already your. You're half of 200.
Right. Oh, so you set it to.
But wait a second. If the para has in it enough to pay chatzi nezek, if
so
it's worth 200 or if it's worth 100, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
So it pays the half nezek. But when the Mishnah says pay a quarter from the valad,
that's when
it means
the,
if
don't
it was
have
not
to pay from
enough
the
here to pay the half, if this was only 75, then it can only pay 75. And there's still 25 left to get to the chatzi nezek. So where do we... What about that 25? Well, you can take a quarter from the valad. Say the valad is worth whatever it's worth. So you take 25. So you can take 7 of that and make the owner pay.
Only 7?
Only 7. Because again, it's all safek. It's safek. It's all doubt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah.
We don't know if the valad is really responsible. It was responsible. Let's see. We don't know if it's responsible.
So anyway, that's according to Sumchus. What are the Hachamim going to say?
Right.
Don't pay anything.
Don't pay anything from the worth of the valad.
Right.
Only from the para that you're certain did the goring. It could be that the para had already given birth when it gored, therefore the velad's value is irrelevant. And that's the halakha. The halakha is, forget about the worth of the velad. And that's the story. The rest is commentary. That's funny.
It's actually a saying. Okay, I'm just making sure you know that.
Yeah, okay, good. Okay. So at home you can read the Rambam that I brought that summarizes the law.
Okay.
Where's, oh, that's on the
sheet. Okay.